Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Happy New Year! Welcome to Richard's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. It'll be coming up pretty soon. If you enjoy this podcast and would like to give a little something back in return for the freeness of this podcast, then please come and see me on tour in Lord of the Dance Settee, which is touring the UK through January, February, March, April and May of this new 2015 year. Go to richherring.com/gigs or richherring.com/LOTDS/tour and you can find out if I'm coming near to you. Please come. Then I can carry on doing these. Now let's enjoy. Richard Herring, that's me. Leicester Square Theatre. I'm referring to myself as a third person like a maniac. Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who says, find another place because you can't play here, spreading all your nits about. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. I've developed a little almost Mike and McIntyre styles little dance I do now every time I come on. I'm very overexcited because I've lost some weight and it's good exercise. Anyway, welcome to the show. It's Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast. You may have heard some people around started calling it Rahalastapa. There's loads of them in who are doing that. It's been a very exciting week. That was a little reference to last week's podcast. You're much better than last week's audience already, by the way. That was Murphy's Mob. That was a quote from that no one had heard of last week either. But I watched a couple of episodes of Murphy's Mob. I think you sent me a link, Andy, didn't you, to the opening titles, which are very good. Linda Bellingham, I've forgotten, was in Murphy's Mob. So that's do watch. You can watch all of them. She's sadly missed, and she's a fantastic actress. So it's very well acted.
This thing, glory days of children's television. No one's interested, Richard, apart from you. But and I should say to our listeners at home, Happy New Year, because this podcast will be going out either on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. So the people who are listening to and watching this are literally from the future. They're from 2015, the year that Marty McFly travels to in Back to the Future. That's how different they're going to be from you people sitting here back in mid-November 2014. They will laugh at you without you. They've got hoverboards. They've got fax machines. They've all got four fax machines in their houses. You might think that's a retrograde step. It's not. Fantastic thing. So welcome. I hope it's nice in the future. We're debating backstage what celebrities might have been died or been assassinated. There'll be some, won't they? We won't know who they are. I'm hoping it's Jeremy Kyle. That's what I'm hoping for. But if it is, don't think, oh, that's a bit sick, Rich, having a go. I didn't know it was. I was just, unless it's me who has killed him in order to make me look like Nostradamus, in which case you should disapprove slightly of what I have done. It's a slap on the wrist offence. Very excitingly, well, this week, back in the real world, it was Ian Gunpowder Day on 5/11, wasn't it? And a lot of people were tweeting the Guy Fawkes. I don't know if you've seen that. There's a Guy Fawkes signature before he is captured and tortured. Then there's a signature afterwards where it's very shaky. But, you know, once you're famous, your autograph does get a lot sloppier because you're doing so many of them, that's... I imagine. So, the exciting thing that happened to me... Well, I've done a few exciting things. I bought a pram this week. That was exciting. No, I'm not for myself. That would be quite, I would quite like one. But quite nice to have an adult pram. I am having a baby. My wife is doing some of the work of that in carrying it. But I've done the hard job. I got it in there, which is like putting a ship in a bottle, isn't it? It's a very hard thing... Very hard thing to do, so I deserve. But we bought a pram, and it's kind of weird going around all the shops, and it's kind of like I'm quite excited because in two or three years the toys start getting interesting. You know, like there was little pinball machines which I'm very interested in for 3 years, but like the baby toys are a bit childish. It's just like there's like some kind of butterfly or something with a mirror on it. That's no good. That's not. What kind of idiot would like that? But once you get onto the tiny little bit, there's like a keyboard you can dance on and it'll play. That's going to be good, isn't it? So it's lots to look forward to, but the first couple of years are boring. Fucking hell. I witnessed a crime this week in Pret a Manger, which I like to go to. I was sitting in Pret a Manger and a sort of shifty man came in and it was quite late on in the evening, and he was sort of fingering all the sandwiches, which I did not like, and especially the little croissants with ham and cheese. He was sort of putting his finger in there. Well, not very nice. He was a little bit shifty. It took ages. And then I saw him just... He looked around, and he just threw one of the sandwiches into his coat and ran out of the Pret a Manger. You know, that is a crime. And I witnessed it, but I didn't grass on him, because that's not the kind of guy... I am. Also, he looked like... The thing is, those sandwiches go to the homeless in about an hour and a half's time. He looked like he really needed it. But then he later... I thought, well, that's impressive. But I was tweeting about how impressed I was with this man stealing a sandwich. It was one of the ham bomb... those ham bomb... They're like the French little rolls. I like them. You know them. None of you eat in Pret a Manger. When you're as rich as me, you'll get to eat in... That's what celebrities do. Me and Josh Widdicombe eat in Pret a Manger. But then he came in and then he got two more sandwiches and took them up to the counter. This was his second trick. He started eating them as the woman was running through the till, and then he didn't have any money. And then he gave him a card, and the card didn't work. It was a brilliant scheme. And they just let him off. It was fantastic. So those are a couple of... you can steal from Pret a Manger is what I'm saying. Anyway, look, we will crack straight on with the podcast. Who knows what we will discover this week. We welcome a man who is perhaps best known for his appearance in the 1990s late night sketch show Planet Mirth, a show so popular that they kept moving it around in the schedules to give the other sketch shows a chance. Put it on at 3 o'clock in the morning on ITV. It was in the days when the comedy shows on ITV weren't just sexist men encouraging people to rape other people. So, will you please, in those days, it was a science fiction. It was very good. We will talk about that. Will you please welcome Milton Jones, ladies and gentlemen, from Planet Mirth, from off of Planet Mirth. Hello, how you doing? Sit down, pull up a mic. Make yourself at home, how are you doing?
Very good, I was in Pret-a-Manger.
It's good, if you want to steal stuff from there, it's quite a good trick to, I think you could get away with it because, you know, without being offensive. and, you know, there gets a point where you think, is it worth us making a fuss about this guy or should we just let him? He was quite impressed just to stand at the counter eating the sandwich.
Yeah, because you don't actually know if he's paid for it at that point. No. He may have a receipt for all you know.
That's true, yeah. So you've got to, you know what, it might be set up. So what do you remember about Planet Mirth, which was...
I remember being offered to do a science fiction sketch show with not many scripts written. So, yeah, I'll do that. And then going, but where are the scripts? And then we had to sort of scrabble them together on the set. And then we realised there were 13 episodes.
There was a lot of episodes. Yeah. Does anyone remember Planet Mirth? Shout out if you remember Planet Mirth. Wow, we've got it. We've done it. We've done it. It's the pointless Dave Gorman Google whack. I remember it, though, because my friend Ben Moore and Emma Kennedy were both in it as well. So was it about 1992?
Seven, I think.
Was it? No, was it that late? Yeah, was it that late?
Yeah, it was that late. Yeah.
It feels so much longer ago than that. I can't remember a thing about it apart from...
I tell you what I had to do. I did a spoof Jeremy Clarkson on fairground rides.
Right.
And just, you know, taking them for a spin, saying, well, that really was great. Sadly, it didn't sound like Jeremy Clarkson. I've never actually been on a fairground ride since because I was just sick because I kept getting it wrong. So they'd just run the ride again. And we were at Alton Towers and just do it again and again and again. The more I got sick I got, the more I couldn't do it.
Wow. Yeah. They should just have put that out. That sounds pretty good. If it was now, that would just be on YouTube, wouldn't it? The guy trying to do the sketch.
I think some of it is on YouTube.
But that was after, because your career has been a lot longer, I think, than many people might realise. which is a good thing, I think, as a comedian, it's good to have been going for a long time. But
I was in the Goon Show.
But you won the Perrier Best Newcomer in 1996. So that presumably you've been going for a few years. Were you going for a few years
before that?
And then you must have thought the Perrier Best Newcomer. It's all coming home. Then Planet Mirth came in. You must think this is everything's going up roses.
Well, to be fair, I have been working since then.
Yeah.
And I did a Radio 4 radio series for years and years. We're still doing it. We're into our 10th series now.
Yeah.
And so I've always been working, but sort of jobbing club comic more than anything else. And, you said it earlier. As soon as you're on telly, people go, oh, he's new. And then there's... Producers are essentially lazy, and there's nothing like being on telly to make them think, oh, he should be on telly more. And so you end up on other stuff as well, and people say, keep coming up to you and going, oh, how long have you been going? And you look over there. So you just got to roll with it.
Yeah, but I think in a sense, I mean, because again, my career, me and Stu had quite a lot of success early on, and he's had quite a lot of success recently. But, you know, it's actually, in a way, I felt it was a bit fast for us. You know, we were within sort of 5 or 6 years, we were sort of on TV, and I wish it had been a bit slower, really. And also now, I feel like after having worked for quite a lot, 25 years or so, I suppose, professionally, is, you know, you sort of start to know what you're doing a little bit, whereas a lot of kids now get sort of taken on TV and chewed up and spat out, don't they?
No, absolutely, and when you're actually on telly regularly, you burn up a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And if you haven't got a back catalogue to go into, you know, you're literally writing stuff and performing it the next day, and that's not very healthy. Inevitably, you're going to look bad at some point.
Yeah.
So, but because I've had like 15 years or so not doing much telly, so every time a producer asks me, so have you got any other ideas? I go, you bet I have.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that moment to come for me. I have a big drawer full of scripts that nothing has happened with. So, yeah, that's exciting. If you subscribe monthly, there's a little bit extra you can watch where we talk backstage. We were talking backstage about one-liners, which is obviously what you're famous for, and what mainly your shows are made up of.
Yeah, which is kind of, I made a rod for my own back in terms of putting an hour and a half tour show together.
Yeah.
It's great, it's sort of good on telly, because you just come on and go bang, 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 and then everyone goes clap, clap, clap. But if you, actually, after about 15 minutes, you can see blood coming out of people's ears. it's too much information. In fact, I've been heckled a couple of times quite sweetly, but someone shouted out, these are just words. And they were right. And another time a woman stood up and said, what is this? Both of those I have no reply to at all.
They're pretty good. Yeah. They're pretty strong heckles.
Yeah. Too philosophical as well to answer.
But it sort of takes you apart as a human being.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. I should think about my life.
There's nowhere to go. You've had. I was reading about quite a... You had a death as well with the 700 barman. Do you remember this?
Yes, I've told it a few times. But corporate in Bedford, I think it was. Several hundred barmen on their night off, going fine. Halfway through, think, well, you know, I'll just chat to them a bit. And I said, well, this is a bit strange, isn't it? It's your night off. You get free food and drink. Surely you get that every night of the week where you work. A woman shouted out, we don't get free food and drink. So I just say, how come you're all so fat then? I didn't realise quite the girth of the lady involved. She ran out crying. The room split into those who thought it was funny and those who were utterly outraged.
Yeah.
I was surrounded afterwards and told her, go into that room, she is crying in that room. You go and apologise. And so I tried to explain about comedy. And I ended up running to the car.
Yeah, I've had a few times where I've had to run out the back exits of places.
Yeah. No, some... I did a black night once, a black comedy night, and...
Okay.
Where was it? Malcolm Hardy used to do them. Was it Willesden or something? Willesden something.
Right.
And someone shouted out. I had a standard put down in those days. Someone shouted at me. I'd say, I used to go out with them. And then they'd shout at me again. And I go, still hurts, eh? And I said it to this bloke. And he rushed the stage and the bouncers. And I had to go out the back.
Yeah.
Another time, I could go on all night. I did a trade union congress thing.
Yeah.
You know, and as we know, those can be difficult. I used to have a joke that went something like, I remember years ago, I used to go out with a girl who was, you know, deformed. For some reason, that night, I forgot to go... And there was no explaining it.
Well, the people who are listening to this as the audio podcast will have a similar, confusion. We may be getting some complaint emails. If for anyone listening at home, what you did was this. So it was fine.
Yeah.
And I think this might be the same article I read about you, but you because obviously you put to distinguish yourself from the character of Milton Jones, a very difficult character. You put your hair up.
A bit, yeah.
Yeah, and your quote is, the thicker the crowd, the higher the hair.
Yeah. It does give me 10 seconds. You know, if you do a difficult crowd in the middle of Essex or something, and certainly when I was less known, it's sort of... If you go in sounding a bit middle class and playing with words, then it doesn't always go that well. But if you stick your hair up and go, oh, he's mad! Suddenly it's a lot less threatening for some reason. It seems to work. And talking earlier about misdirection as well, I think most people who do one-liners have a way of deflecting the attention from the words. In that, I say Tim Vine is very sort of showman-like, doing jokes like that, and Jimmy Carr goes for the dark side, and I go for the weird side. That's basically it. And so you're sort of creating a world other than the words. Because, I was saying that, you know, I have gone... someone introduced me too early at a club once, and I hadn't done my hair or my shirt or anything. And I just ran on stage and did the same jokes. And I felt from the audience, maybe it was just my insecurity, that they're all going, these are just puns, really, aren't they? Yeah. Just words.
But so maybe it is interesting that I think when you yourself as a performer feel, you know, that it's a prop for you as much as the audience. So you think you're sort of thinking, oh no, they're not laughing as much because they're thinking this.
So
you make the problem for yourself, I think, a lot of the times, when sometimes it can just be it's a quieter room or a high ceiling.
No, absolutely. But also, I started off as an actor.
Yeah.
Actor. And there's something about putting the hair on and the shirt and go, right, now I am playing the part.
Mm.
And when you stop, I mean, because there are two types of comics, aren't there? There's a comic that's on all the time and joke, and fun for 10 minutes, but hell to share a car with. And then there's the other one who's sort of one person off stage, one person on stage.
Yeah.
Which I think I'm the latter.
I think so. I would hope so. Mm. It would be hard to keep it up, I think, forever. I think it would sort of drive you. It is that thing where if you're playing a slightly insane character, and I like to just kind of skirt around those issues of playing slightly crazier than I am. and in different ways, but the danger is that then that kind of comes, affects your real life, you become a zombie.
But I think it's quite hard for comedians, whichever type they are, for it not to affect your real life.
Yeah.
Because it affects how you are socially as well. You can't help if someone says something and you go, no, there's something in that.
Yeah.
Or even we all know comedians who try out material in normal conversations.
Yeah.
And we can spot it, and probably their friends and family can as well. But you just think, oh, for goodness sake, give it a rest. Anyway, three men went into...
You're allowed to do jokes now. This is on stage. I was interested in you. So you went to drama school?
I went to Middlesex Poly, as it was then, to do drama.
From fans. More people have heard of Middlesex Poly Drama Department than Planet Mer.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true.
And did you do much acting...
I did, when I left college, I did a bit of theatre and education.
Ah, yes.
And the sort of group that, League of Gentlemen spoofed, basically.
Oh, yeah, Legs Akimbo.
Yeah, Legs Akimbo type scenarios and kids' pantomimes and things like that. But I wasn't working very much. So that's why I turned to doing stand-up, because you could say to a director or a producer, come and see me do this stand-up. And I thought I'd be marvellous at it because I knew how to speak. But it turns out it's quite hard, especially when someone interrupts you.
Yeah.
Then you're off script, and then you don't know what to do.
Well, it's much harder than acting, because acting's just reading something out that someone else is saying and pulling in a face, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's what
basically.
It is. Yeah. Was that the course of middle
comedy?
Comedy's about writing it yourself and then pulling in a face.
Yes.
That is slightly harder. Slightly more difficult.
But at least you can go anywhere you want, and if you forget your lines halfway through, you can pull another face and just go off in a different direction. We'd be a nightmare in a play now. Well, you do plays. But
I rarely am in them, I have to
say. Okay, well, there's less fear of forgetting lines and things. You think, I'll just make something up. Of course, other actors are really freaked by that.
Yes.
Because they don't... When, actors are very nervous and do warm-ups beforehand, because we're sort of eating pies and just finish and walk on and start talking. I know I am.
That's what we were doing backstage, just guzzling big pies.
Yum, yum, yum.
And are you doing any acting? Would you take acting work now, or is it stand-up?
I would do, except that often you have to go away and do Aberdeen for 6 weeks or whatever it is. I'd love to do it, but I'm trying. We're all trying to get our own sitcoms off the ground, I suppose. But I'd like to act in something I wrote, for sure.
Because you have done, I mean, obviously you've done your radio series.
Yeah, and Planet Mirth.
There was a lot of acting in that. And what happened, because I love the title of your, you had a Channel 4 pilot?
House of Rooms.
Yeah.
Norman
Jones, House of Rooms. That's
House
crazy.
Of Rooms, yeah, it's on Netflix now.
Yeah,
actually.
Is it?
Everyone seemed to like it, except the head of Channel 4. So that was kind of the key person.
Yeah.
But obviously I'm developing other stuff with every other person as well at the moment. So who knows? Who knows, we may get a chance to do something similar.
Yeah, it is difficult. I'm going to ask you an emergency question.
Oh.
This is a new emergency question, a newish. If you had to choose between dating a man who was literally a 6-foot penis So he's just a few of those. He's just a penis. He's a penis. He's a penis.
Okay,
he's got a face.
How would he stand up then?
Well, he just manages to stand up. He doesn't have feet. He doesn't have balls either. He's just a penis.
But that would help though with the balance.
I imagine it's a sort of slug-like affair underneath there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how he's sort of standing, and there's some kind of sucker on the bottom.
Yes.
Or
you got carried away there. Yeah.
We can discuss. You know, there might be more questions about each. He's got a little face, and he's got a mouth. He doesn't have any genitalia because he is a genitalia.
Just one eye, though.
Yeah, he's got an external meatus up on his there.
Yeah.
So which you could, you know, if the date went well, he has got a polar neck. If the date went well, you could have sex. You'd have to find a way to have sex with him. I would imagine that you would have to use his blowhole as...
Yes. But unless he had his own genitals as part of the...
Yeah, he doesn't.
Okay.
He does not have that. That would be weird. Yeah. Or...
My mistake.
Or the other choice is a man who, instead of a penis, has a tiny man. He's a separate person, but he's connected. He's not detachable.
Yeah.
He's got his own personality. Yep. He's facing... We've established a few things. The man is facing... They're face-to-face.
Yes.
So to speak. There are still testicles. His feet are into the body, so his head up. I think that's the main... He can talk and stuff. So it's like going out with two people.
Yeah.
But again... And that man would in turn have his own tiny man as a penis. And so on to infinity, all the way around.
A weird Russian doll.
Yeah. Which of those two? Which
I think
out
the
those
former,
two?
Actually. Really? Yeah, yeah. Because the other one is... Well, it's just... You'd look into his eyes, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Too awkward.
Yeah.
Whereas the other...
You aren't the man with the penis, you're dating the man with the penis.
Yes, no, I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that.
But you just would get distracted by the two...
Yes, it would be more...
I feel sorry for this. Everyone goes for the tiny... I feel sorry for the tiny man, who in a way is a sort of slave or vassal of the larger man.
Yes.
He can't escape from...
So they're not a Siamese sort of a thing.
It's sort of almost, but he's...
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's tiny as well. He should be in a different world, shouldn't he? He's been somehow...
I think the whole idea is from a different world.
It's an important question. It says a lot about people, which one they choose, and you're the only person to choose to go out with a six-foot penis, and that will be... The headline in the Daily Mirror.
Yes.
Milton Jones wants to date a 6 foot penis.
Right, yes.
Galton, that's an interesting answer. if you were dying, which I hope doesn't happen for a while, which celebrity would you like to stroke your hair as you died?
Ooh.
Can have any of the celebrities. I chose, I don't know why, I chose Bouncer from Neighbours. I don't know why I chose, that was a sort of odd choice. But you've kind of got to throw yourself into it. It's quite difficult to think.
Alive or dead?
Well, I mean, they would be alive when they did it. Yeah. You would be nearly dead. And then
obviously,
you would die.
Yeah.
So the last thing you would have would be there. And then they're just going, oh, don't worry.
Yeah.
If it was me, this was what you'd say. Don't worry. It'll be all right. You'll just step into the light. Just step into the light.
Yes. Trying to think.
Or I might go, you're not going to die. Don't worry, he's going to die. He's definitely going to die. Just pretend he's not going to die.
Someone with healing hands.
He could.
Yeah. Who would that be? McCoy from Star Trek.
Okay, yeah.
Suddenly get better. Yeah, I can't think. Barbara Woodhouse. She's probably quite good at stroking.
She would.
I was going to say Rolf Harris, but...
not anymore.
No.
Not now. Not after everything he's done. Which, if you had to... If you went on a... let's move on. I was thinking of his painting and then I remembered the other stuff that had happened. If you went... I've come up with an idea for a show called Desert Island Dicks. It's not what you're thinking. You get standing on a desert island with your favourite eight Richards... Which eight Richards would you take with you to the desert island?
Okay.
I am the luxury Richard. I'm like the Bible and William Shakespeare. You get me,
whatever happens. Yes. Richard the Third.
Okay. Are you shunning Richard the First and Richard the Second?
Yes. Wow. I'll say yes. Richard the Third, not Richard Keys. Richard Burton.
Yeah. That'd be good. You count that as three, but the second one was not the one that you weren't going to have.
True. Richard Polly. He was a friend from school.
Okay, that's good.
Richard Iowodie.
Oh, yeah, Richard Iowodie. Yeah. He's a good choice. So far, you've gone for all original Richards, which is good.
What's the alternative to that?
Well, other people have chosen Richards, and you haven't matched any of them yet. Oh, so you're not allowed to have...
I'd be good at pointless.
Yeah, you would.
Which is coincidental.
It is.
Richard. What? Richard Eyre, is that E-Y-R-E? He's a playwright, isn't he?
Yeah, I think it was something like that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Wendy Richard.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right.
She may be in demand. Richard Whitmore, who used to do the news.
Oh, yes. Good one.
Yeah.
Very good. What I quite like about this is it takes a long time to think of. It's hard.
Richard Baker, who used to do the news.
That would create
tension. We'd have a lot of good voices. Really. Baker, Whitmore.
Do you think there'd be tension having two newsreaders?
Yeah, there might be on the island. I think maybe one might end up face down in the water. good night from him.
I think Baker would take Whitmore.
Yeah, Baker's voice was... But is he still alive? I don't know.
I think he might be. Anyone know if Richard Baker's still alive? I think Richard Whitmore might still be alive.
Yeah, probably is. But how many is that, Richard?
I think you're up to about six.
The trouble is, kids aren't called Richard these days.
They aren't. That's what makes it hard.
Or Milton, for that matter. That was never quite the case.
They would never be Desert Island Miltons.
No, they wouldn't. There'd be me and Milton Keynes. That would be a roundabout island. Ricardo, does that count?
Yeah, I guess.
Ricardo Carvalho, the defender who used to play for Chelsea.
It feels to me like you're just making this up as you go along, rather than putting a lot of... I want you to vouch for
Ricardo Carvalho, who used to play for Chelsea.
Yeah, no, but I'm just concerned that you're just saying the first eight Richards you can think of, where it has to be the eight that you would take to a desert island.
I think they're one and the same.
Because we're going to send you to a desert island with all these people.
Yeah, no, I like the idea, though. It's a good, sort of a bit Dave Gorman-ish, isn't it?
It is. That
kind of, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Wreck that. Talking to Dave Gorman, when you eat asparagus, which I'm guessing you do all the time now with your celebrity lifestyle.
Yeah, very much so.
Does your wee smell of asparagus afterwards?
Yes, it does.
Good, that means you have the receptors that can, unless someone else has told you that. Sarah Pascoe, her wee does smell of asparagus.
Regardless.
She eats so much asparagus, it's hard to tell. She can't smell the smell. It took her boyfriend smelling the asparagus to let her know that her wee smells of asparagus.
Let's go round to their house.
Unfortunately, the tape of that got lost.
Yeah.
So the people at home will never know about it. No. But there we go. The next... You're the patron of Chance for Children...
Chance for Childhood.
Oh, all right.
Chance for Children sounds like somebody else.
I went back to Wikipedia to check whether it was Change or Chance. I didn't then check whether it was Children or Childhood.
Yeah, well... Yeah.
Chance for Childhood.
I am.
So a Chance for Childhood. That's more sinister than Chance for Children. That's like, you've got a Chance for Childhood, or...
Yeah.
Whereas Chance for Children...
That sounded fun to me. So I like it.
But you get to go to... Have you been? You've been to Uganda.
I was in Uganda. Basically, it's a charity that works with children. Surprisingly, different projects around the world. I went out to Uganda in May this year to see them working with ex-child soldiers, which was heavy.
Yeah.
And it kind of came away thinking. Well, I'll tell you, I had to speak to a youth group because they wanted me to do my comedy, and none of them. English wordplay was kind of not the thing they were looking for. But I pretended to be Patrick Monaghan, basically. He's a comic who does a lot of crowd interaction and stuff. And didn't use his material as such, but, you know, lots of that interaction. I got away with it.
You could have got away with it in Uganda.
Yeah, probably. Well, yes, I'd still be going on. But anyway, I got to the end of this performance, loosely, call it that, and... And so, and they did questions and answers afterwards, and the kid put up his hand and said, so in your career as a comedian, what difficulties have you had? And I looked out at the kids who'd been, whose parents' houses had been burnt down and girls had been raped and their kids were running around and the kids had been soldiers and forced to shoot their own relatives. I thought, probably not that much. It's happening to me bad. So good luck to you. Bye. But yeah, no, it was very salutary. And seeing kids who brought in from the jungle who had literally still, you know, finding it very difficult to relax.
Yeah.
Because just horrible stories. And each, the trouble was, the stories were so horrible, I couldn't empathise. Right. You know, that one of the stories was that Coney's resistance army had come in, had chopped up some adults, put them in a stew and made the children eat them, right? God. Just go, oh, that is a whole different level of bad.
Yeah.
And he'd made the children help with that. And so they'd be traumatised so badly that that is out of my league of reference, you know. If they'd said their cat or their granddad had died, I'd been able to go, oh, that's, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But this was like, okay, can I just step back on the plane? I've nothing to say here, and I'll just go and do a benefit, if that's all right. But it was good to suddenly realise that, you know, you kind of know it anyway, and we've got compassion fatigue here as it is, but if you look into the eyes of the people, you know, a lot of them were smiling and running around. I said, well, why, you know, they seem okay, some of these kids, not all of them. I said, yeah, but a lot of others committed suicide. Right. So it's a long-term project, and maybe I won't even go back, because I'm not sure, there's an element of, look, I'm not much use here, but I'm more use here.
Yeah.
Writing stuff and getting some money together, you know, with charity bits and pieces. But it did make me think, oh yeah, I knew that about the third world. But when you see someone's face and you see what they used to have and what they haven't got now, I mean, even they'd had all this trauma, but what they hadn't had, of course, was a childhood. They hadn't played with toys, they hadn't done sport, they hadn't, you know. And so I could help with that.
Yeah.
Chance for my childhood as well. I took my wife and daughter as well, and they just did art and crafts with them, and they're just very easily pleased. And to come back to do a corporate for some advertising people afterwards, just go, oh. But you can't tell people, can you? You just got to try and be the difference where you are. It can be totally overwhelming, though.
Yeah, yeah.
What nice. Charities do you do?
Well, I've worked with Scope.
Oh, right. Yes, so, yes, yeah, of course.
A lot. Yeah. So that's the main one I do, yeah. Which is, you know, I mean, it's not at all similar, I don't suppose, but it's, you know, it does give you a, again, I collected for years without going, and then and then I went to the schools, and
yeah.
You know, it is, you know, that's it's a real eye opener, and but again, I think it's that feeling, you know, it's the feeling, because a lot of disability in this society is sort of hidden away.
Sure.
And we don't get to,
yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's a terrible thing. And it's very difficult for disabled people to, for example, get into this theatre. You know, so, or anywhere. So it's, so, yeah. You know, I was very nervous about going there, but it was, I found it very life affirming because, because I, you know, realised how ridiculous I was very afraid that I would say the wrong thing or look shocked or embarrass myself or, you know, whatever I would do that would screw it up. And, you know, and you get over that very quickly, and then you sort of see the people rather than the disabilities in the wheelchair. So it was you know, it's good to do these things, but not great to talk about it on this podcast now. When I now go and ask you if you've ever tried to suck your own cock next, now I'm gonna look, that's gonna look insensitive, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's gonna look like a weird thing to know. It's a very interesting, and it's nice that you can. I guess to get that perspective, you know, even if we're doing stupid, I'm doing cock jokes and you're doing weird puns.
Yeah,
it's nice that you get perspective on the world.
It puts it in context a bit. Yeah. And people say, "Oh, I don't know how you do what you do. You go on stage, you do this." Well, it's not easy when you begin, but you know, you get to a plateau, and then it does become easier.
Yeah.
And compared to even a doctor or something, a doctor makes a mistake, and that's. That's pretty bad. Whereas we make a mistake and people don't laugh.
Yeah.
And that feels bad to us at the time, as it did to me 2 weeks ago at the Cardiff Retail Awards. Well, just Just before they put me on, they said, you do realise that 80% of the people here are Indian and don't speak English. I said, what about the 20%? Oh, they said, Chinese and Sri Lankan. So, just talking to a room for half an hour. No laughs.
Well, that's quite. I did an awards thing this week at Aston Villa Football Ground.
Ooh.
Fans of Aston Villa in. And they leave the. What I found interesting, I had my dressing room was one of the director's boxes alongside the pitch.
Yeah.
And it was a long way away from the room. We were actually doing a room in Aston Villa rather than on the pitch. Which was like, it was very cold in there. They leave the scoreboard and the lights and the things on even during the week.
Really?
Very big waste of electricity, isn't it?
Yeah.
They should spend some of that money on getting some new players.
That's where we're going. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I don't do many of those things. But due to having lost a lot of money in Edinburgh, I've had to start reassessing my life. Yes. It's a difficult thing to do because it's an awards. And funnily enough, Patrick Moynihan, who you mentioned, had done it the year before. And then I did it this year, and I got through the awards in about, there was 12 awards, and I got through them in about 20 minutes, and it was, they'd given an hour, and she said, it was weird because last year it was the exact opposite. And Patrick Moynihan had for some reason gone on, which would be funny for the comedians, but not so much for everyone else. It's a difficult audience anyway, because it's not necessarily your audience. They haven't come to see you, they've come for awards.
They might not even know there's any comedy or anything.
Exactly.
They go, what? Stop. We were snogging. Don't interrupt us. But yeah, we've all got horror stories.
Yeah.
Anyway,
look, I'll get on to this. This will lighten the mood. This is, have you seen this website, Dirty Britcom Confessions? In which...
No, I haven't. Well, I have heard about it. Yeah. I thought that, I don't want to know.
Well, you're going to find out all about it now. I didn't think there would be, again, not to be offensive, I didn't think there would be many for you. There were none for Andy Zaltzman, for example, and I'm not saying that I'm putting you on a par with... he's got unusual hair, that's all I'm saying as well. There are more for you than Victoria Coren, who I was expecting there to be just reams about. And Victoria Coren ones are very respectful and polite.
Oh, really?
Which again is unusual. There are quite a few for you. I'll give you a few. They're not too bad. I would make such a sticky mess of Milton Jones.
Is that good?
I don't know. I don't really understand what it is. It sounds like they might want to sort of pummel you to death with their fists.
Or be in Bake Off.
This might affect the way you perform from now on. Every time Milton Jones licks his lips on stage, I imagine it's me he's licking.
I'm not sure I've ever licked my lips on stage.
Now you're going to think about it. This is, a lot of them say more about the person. They're all anonymous fantasies, basically, and they say more about... This one says more about the person. After seeing Milton Jones dressed as Heathcliff in a recent GQ... Did you do that? Yeah.
Maybe.
I can see a picture of you. Yeah. I keep having this recurring fantasy that he abducts me from my forthcoming wedding in a horse-drawn carriage to a remote farmhouse, drags me into a barn, and after roughly deflowering me... subjects me to a week-long ordeal of utter debauchery. I love every fucking minute of it. In brackets, I hope my fiance doesn't find out I wrote this. A, it implies she's been saving herself. You'll be deflowering her. So it's
very unhygienic.
There is lack of hygiene. She's been saving herself till her wedding day, but is hoping that you will turn up on a horse-drawn carriage dressed as Heathcliff, I'm presuming. Yeah. Abduct her?
Yes.
Do you think you'd be up for... I think there's a danger of you doing this.
Do you know that's Kate Bush?
It would be nice if it was. This is just a piece of advice for you. Milton Jones shouldn't wear such tight shorts on Soccer AM.
Fair enough.
Probably anywhere.
Yeah.
This is a nice review of your book. It's kind of they're unusual this week, and they're usually quite debauched. Just read Milton Jones's Where Do Comedians Go When They Die? Having watched the spiky-haired, loud-shirted loon on Mock the Week, I was expecting it to be all ha-ha-ha-ha-ha. Wait to guess.
Good heckle.
It broke me in half like a fucking pencil.
I would say that is not. That shouldn't be on. That should be on. They think they've gone to the Amazon reviews page, and that's not. That is not a sex fantasy. Yeah. That's a review of your book being moving.
Do you think if you go on the Amazon review page,
I might have to check. And when I went to see Jimmy Carr and Milton Jones, I hoped that they would invite me backstage after the show to fuck me in their dressing room. Was that any? I mean, that's quite hopeful.
I'm not sure I'd like to share anything. No, like that's with what Jimmy Carr.
No. Oh. But aside from that,
obviously, apart from that, yeah, was...
all good. So that's that's what the. There's a lot that there's more than that.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
There's a lot of people having slightly filthy thoughts about you.
Perhaps I could use some of the quotes for my poster for the tour.
It should do. Right. If you had to choose between having a handmade out of ham and an armpit that dispense sun cream, which is not as popular with the crowd, which of those two things would you choose? His hand is made of ham.
Yeah.
It would regrow after you've nibbled it.
I was going to ask, yeah.
So it would be a snack. If you ate it all, it would take quite a long time to grow back, though. Yeah. You can't just keep wolfing it down. It doesn't go... It would take a month or so. But if you just nibbled it, you know...
But do you mean, like, not in aspic? Or is it like a processed ham? Or is it like fresh?
I think it would be a nice... I think maybe you could get a choice. Not, you can't go too expensive.
Crumbed?
If you'd like crumbs on it,
then we can do that. I'm sure I could do that.
Just stick it. It would be slightly sticky, I think.
Yeah, no, it would be.
So you could just put your hand in some crumbs.
Yeah, make a sticky mess of me.
Yeah. the sun cream you'd get... that would grow back, so it would be kind of infinite amount of ham.
Which factor?
You choose the factor, but it's only enough for you and maybe one of your family for the year. not everyone in your family.
Okay. I think I'd definitely go for the ham.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Yeah, hams,
because then you could have a knife in the other hand.
Yeah.
And just carve away.
Yeah.
Spend hours doing that.
Good. It would really hurt as well. I didn't mention that.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, you told me that, yeah.
That's like the devil setting up or giving it. It'll be an amazing thing, but it would hurt.
The sun cream is acid.
It would be acid. Did you ever watch Murphy's Mob, the 1980s children's
television? Doesn't ring a bell. Murphy's War.
No, that's
the
no
war
good.
Film. Murphy's Construction. The Builders.
Yeah.
But never Murphy's Mob.
No, it was good. Check it out on YouTube. It's all up on YouTube. I got quite into it. I watched two or three episodes. It's slightly out of sync. But, you know.
What year was it made?
I would say 1981.
Wow.
It's just a guess. maybe a bit earlier than that. It might have been late 70s.
Richard Stilgo.
Yeah. He's not in it. Find his keepers.
No, the Richard.
Oh, that's another Richard. That would be a good one. Do you remember Finders Keepers that Richard Stilgo presented? Finders Keepers, not for sleepers. Finders Keepers, where's that square? Finders Keepers, not for sleepers. Finders Keepers, yeah. It was a panel.
What was the theme tune like?
I'm very good at remembering TV shows that no one remembers, which
Follyfoot.
I do vaguely remember Follyfoot. Yeah. We're a little bit older, so we have an unfair advantage over some people in the audience that they were not born when these shows were on.
But
you and I should roughly remember the same thing. I'm surprised you're a little bit older than I am.
Yeah.
I thought, because you're so new to comedy. Yeah. I thought you're about 23.
Yes.
But you're a little bit older than me, so you should remember all of these.
Yes, but then there's a gap, isn't there? When you're sort of teenage, you don't watch so much. Or maybe you did.
I really did. I watched children's TV for a really long time. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, I watched in the... I mean, I was obsessed with Press Gang, and I'm sure that shouldn't be in my... I was an adult. I mean, it was quite a sexy programme, though, right? Because they were grown up. Well, they were like... They were in the sixth form. I was still only like 21.
Yes. Well, Fist of Fun was based on Why Don't You, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Yeah. Who remembers Why Don't You? Yeah. I'd say everyone remembers. Yeah. Planet Murph, no. Murphy's Mob, no.
Yeah.
Anything with Mirth in the title doesn't do so well. That's what
we
discovered. Yeah. Or Richard Stilgo in it.
Yeah.
Who remembers Finders Keepers with Richard Stilgo? Yeah. It was like the only connect of. of the late 70s.
Come on. Casey Jones.
Yeah, Casey Jones. Yeah.
Champion the Wonder Horse.
Yeah.
The Flashing Blade.
Flashing Blade, which when I was looking at Murphy's Mob, I watched the opening titles of The Flashing Blade. Again, once you get into that loop, you're in trouble on YouTube.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Because you get into a loop of watching either theme tunes or then whole episodes and then whole series. Mm. The Lost Islands was the one.
Ah, there once was a world.
Yeah, I can do the whole thing. I've watched about 12 of these. Yeah, yeah. Who had a wonderful idea. Take children from all places with all kinds of faces. Together into a sailing ship. There were 40 boys and girls. They wished to sail a ship around the globe, so they called it the United World. I can do the whole thing for you. I think we may have discussed this one in a previous series.
Yeah. Dusty's Trail. Yeah, no, it was ITV. Maybe you weren't allowed to watch.
No, we weren't allowed to watch. To watch ITV. Anyone enjoying this Peter Kay unpopular step down? It's a really difficult thing to get it right. You know, that's why Peter Kay is a genius for spotting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you remember?
That you just have to go for the really popular ones. Yeah. That was his genius.
White Horses.
Mm. Yeah. We can just sing theme tunes for the next 15 minutes. There were some really good ones.
Yeah.
The Murphy's Mob theme tune is genuinely one of the best.
I'll have to look it up now.
Have a look. I'll tell you what, I'll move backstage after. I've got a computer back there. We can have a man's left in disgust at us. How have they got so long?
He's gone to watch it.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
One. I thought you would have done. I was disappointed.
No.
I thought of all people you would have seen a ghost.
Of all people?
Yeah.
Do I look like I've seen a ghost?
Yeah. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
Has anyone?
Well, that's the question, isn't it?
That's not a Yeti, is it?
I would allow a Sasquatch, Yeti, Bigfoot in any.
There's one's in the Himalayas and one's in North America.
They're different, but that's like saying I've seen an Indian elephant and I'm not going to say I haven't seen an African elephant.
Greg Davis, does that count?
He does. He's got about the biggest. Although Robert Llewellyn used to make shoes, and he made a shoe for a size 30 foot. It's what we discovered in a previous rehearsal.
Here's the thing. My son. Sorry. Oh, sorry. You know it's going well when the audience of podcast interrupt. What?
He was just shouting out Rahulastapa. Oh, because I said Rahulastapa. Andy McCaich is better than most of the audience at spotting this.
I was going to say, Greg Davis was my my son's drama teacher.
No way!
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So, my name's Mr. Davis, I'm 6'8", get over it. So I first met Greg in a parents' meeting.
Oh my God!
I didn't know he did comedy at that point.
Right.
And then Rod Gilbert said to me afterwards, "Oh, here, you've met Greg Davis." I said, "Oh, Mr. Davis." And then after that, we didn't talk about my son at all. We just talked about comedy.
How weird!
Yeah, what happened to him?
Whatever happened? Up for a British Comedy Award.
Is he?
Down. I think so. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I've done the 22nd year in a row that I've not been invited to the ceremony. I'm not bitter about it. Yeah. One of these. I'm going to give it 22 more years and then I'm stopping. Yeah. That is. What does that say that for? Oh, well, this is what I talk. I don't know what it says. I'm going to have to ask you about that in a second. But you did the. We've got to talk about this. You did the men's health abs challenge.
Yes.
We didn't do it together.
No, no.
But we were both featured in Men's Health, where we did the 6-week abs challenge. Mm. As you could probably, people were looking at us thinking, what's with the abs?
What were they like before?
Have you managed to, it was quite a few months ago. Have you managed to keep up with the abs?
A little bit, a little bit. Certainly, I don't drink fruit juice anymore.
Oh, okay.
I drink less coffee. I try and drink less alcohol. That's difficult. Yeah. And
you know, it's mainly about doing sit-ups, though.
That's why it didn't work.
If you're drinking really like that,
yeah,
that might do it.
This is on the first day, my personal trainer, because we each got a personal trainer for 6 weeks. And did you do supplements as well?
I didn't.
Yeah, I did a little bit of that, but they all tasted horrible.
No, I got a nutritionalist, or is that what they call it?
Right,
who was a bit new agey for my tastes. And I did some of it. She made me oat groats for breakfast, which, sounds rude, right? Yeah. But I said I always eat porridge for breakfast because I really like porridge. And so that flummoxed already. And then she got out these things and said, just point to what size flakes you would have on this chart. She got out different size porridge flakes. Because she was thinking, I could see, she's going, I'm going to show him. He's going for the little regular tiny flakes that everyone has. I said, no, my flakes are like that. I like jumbo, old Scottish, old-fashioned oats. That is what. And so she was flummoxed by that. She went, oh. Because then she still had to come in with you're doing it wrong. That's her job, isn't it? Then she said, well, you're going to have to eat oat groats, which is like the oats before they've been processed. You have to soak them in a... you have to put them in a flask overnight with hot water, and then they cook in the flask overnight. And then I had to have them with like 300 grams of vegetables. That was my breakfast.
No.
I don't do that anymore.
Yes.
It was kind of quite interesting.
I lost half a stone.
Did you? Yeah. This year I've lost, I'm actually now back to where I was before I started doing the men's health challenge. This year I've lost like 12 kilos. So I'd done quite a lot before. I did it. But it was good. I also worked out next to Prince Harry.
Really?
Yeah, because my gym was... They gave us membership to these kind of nice gyms. Mine was the Third Space, which is in central London. Mm-hmm. And he goes there.
Wow.
And then we were in a room, and then him and his trainer came in and were next to me. And then I was...
What was he doing?
Well, I didn't want to look at him too much, because he was doing quite manly things at the time.
Yeah.
I was sitting on one of those big balls. Yeah. And having to go over... I was trying to go over backwards and touch the floor. So it was a slightly... this wasn't how I pictured meeting royalty. It was difficult. I was doing the opposite of bowing, though, when you think about it. So it's the showing the most disrespect to impossible.
The curtsy move.
But I was sort of I felt slightly self-conscious about anyone else coming into the room while I was doing that. But then it was Prince Harry. And if I, he was there, I could have lunged at him.
Yeah. Because I knew had security with him.
He didn't, but I guess the guy he was with, reckon Prince Harry could deal with me on his own. given he's in the army and that.
You didn't go, ginger.
I went and punched. How did you feel doing the before and the after shots?
I did them on my own.
Yeah.
Which was
because you weren't there. I was going to say, I couldn't remember if you turned up right at the end.
I insisted on doing them on my own.
Because me, Stephen K. Amos,
and Alderton.
And Terry Alderton had to sort of do a group shot where we were larking around and sort of hugging each other. Yeah. And it was really like a colour chart because I'm very pale and Terry Alderton was slightly orange and Stephen K. Amos is obviously. A browner man.
Yes.
Is that the politically correct way of... it's so confusing these days, but it was just the three of us in a row looked slightly... And I'm quite short, and they're both quite tall gentlemen as well.
But I'm glad I did it, because if you don't do that, you never ever do it.
No.
If it's all laid on for you, and you say, nah, down. So, but it was difficult. I didn't have a beer for the whole World Cup, it was hard work.
I don't like drinking anymore.
Really?
I've kind of given it up. I gave up those 3 months I was doing that, and then I drank a bit in Edinburgh, and then I don't like it anymore.
It's probably good all round, isn't it? Health-wise, financial.
Yeah. But, it's sort of... I'd like to still feel young. I'd like to have I'd like to think I could do it if I wanted to do it.
You're getting lots of early nights.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Would you do a beer ad?
No, I don't really. Again, having to slightly reassess my world after this year's Edinburgh, but I don't really like the idea of doing adverts. Have you done adverts?
I've done odd bits and pieces. I'm not against them, but I'd like to think I would be careful.
Yeah,
I do odd voiceovers now and again.
Yeah,
I did a voiceover not so long ago for a carvery in Yorkshire, and it was £2.99. That's wrong, isn't it? £2.99 to eat as much as you want. What is it?
And think how much money they were spending on advertising.
Yeah, I know.
When you say it was $2.99, that's what the carvery cost. That wasn't what you got paid. It's $2.99, Milton. Yeah. You have to drive up to Yorkshire and sort of just do it.
And stand in the corner of a restaurant.
Roll up.
Carvery is now open for $2.99.
Yes. He's a bloke from Mock the Week.
Yes, yeah. I am.
Yes. Occasionally I do them, but not often.
Yeah. No. You don't have a moral objection to...
Well, some things. I've turned quite a lot down.
Yeah.
But sometimes you go, oh, someone's got to talk and they don't even know it's me. I'm not sure that makes it all right.
Is that like we're gassing people in chambers? No one knows it's me doing it, though. I'm hidden behind a little... One time the screen come up and they saw... Then I realised it doesn't really matter. They're all going to be dead in a minute anyway.
Yeah. It's exactly the same logic. Yeah.
That's how I... It was a satire of the advertising industry.
Yeah.
You're on tour with your new show. What's it? Have you got a title for your new show?
Milton Jones and the Temple of Daft.
Oh, yes.
And sort of Indiana Jonesy feel to it, because I've got the same surname, basically. And it starts in February, and I'm doing odd warm-ups now and again, but... yes, it's a lot of one-liners. It's more of a narrative this time. It's more like a radio show that I've done.
Okay.
So it's me following the arc of a story, loosely.
Right.
Loosely. And then I play my uncle. What I do is I do 15 minutes at the top as my uncle. I did my granddad on the last tour. And then I have a support act, Nish Kumar, who is very good. And then I do an hour and a bit in the second half. So, it's a lot of words, though.
Well, it is. Like I say, I've written like 6 one-liners in my life, and I well, this is kind of, well, let's quickly brief talk about this. Interestingly, at the awards I did this week in Aston Villa, I did a joke which I've been doing for 20 years, which actually Stuart Lee wrote. That's how he wrote it years ago, and then I went and it fitted into one of my shows that no one's ever complained about, that it upset one person. This thing, which is Jerry Hall. Advice, girls, on how to keep your man is to act like a cook in the kitchen, a maid in the parlour, and a whore in the bedroom. Better advice, though, girls, if you want to keep your man, is to act like a whore in every room of the house. Most men won't really care what state the parlour has got into, as long as you're whoring it up in the airing cupboard. I've done that joke, and I kind of think that's sort of fine. But then I think I've been doing it for a long time, so maybe it's time to get rid of it anyway. But like one person did an everyday sexism about me because of that. So that's kind of, it's sort of weird when that happens, when you've done a joke that long and never had a complaint about it, and then some one person complains about it. They didn't make a big deal about it.
Yeah.
But you had a sort of similar thing, I think, with, you did a joke about praying at mosques.
Well, no, I've got a lot of similar things, to be honest.
Yeah.
There's a joke I do, which I think I do in most places, about tricky, isn't it, if you're in a mosque and everyone's praying and you really enjoy leapfrog. You know, it's not about the Muslim religion, it's just about what it looks like when they're praying. I think that's fair enough, but I probably wouldn't do it to some soldiers in Afghanistan. Probably not.
Yeah.
Even though I think it'd probably go down well. There was another joke I used to have, is recently I've set up a holiday for children. We've been advertising a holiday for children with short attention spans. But I've made the mistake of advertising them as concentration camps. And I use it, it works perfectly well, but just one or two Jewish friends went, they just went, a bit too much, and I thought, I'll just not do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of interesting. I mean, as we're recording this, there's been a lot of discussion this week about Dapper Laughs, who's been doing sort of very, I mean, not as clever as either of any of those jokes, and they're just fairly basic sexist rape-based jokes, which are not very well thought through. But it's kind of interesting that, I mean, it is about the audience you're playing to as much as anything. I think the mistake I made with that was to do, it was the edgiest joke I did in this set.
Sure.
But, you know, obviously at a comedy night, that's kind of okay. Yeah. But, you know, again, I would say the spirit of that joke is against what Jerry Hall said rather than against... Yeah. It's just sort of mocking that rather than really thinking absolutely. Anyone's going to take that seriously. But it's a bit cheeky. It's about... Mm. it's about the person doing it. So, you know, Dapper Laughs could take that mosque joke and make it quite unpleasant, is my,
yes. And I have
is my
done,
guess.
I have done gigs in certain places, and I have heard lads at the back go, yeah, tell them.
Yeah.
Ooh, no, sorry, I did that. No, you haven't really caught the vibe here. And I think, yeah, you're always going to get someone who misinterprets what you say. The trouble is, I think we become quite hard-skinned. And it's quite, it's a joke that works! So we're going to do it. But it's quite hard to keep a conscience of any kind or integrity, because we've got to fill up a tour with jokes. So it's sometimes, and comedians aren't always the best person, I think. So, you know,
although, I mean, that's what's been interesting about this week is, in a way, the comedians... Mm. I mean, I think with Dapper Laughs, he never really worked within the circuit, so he never had that... Yeah. I mean, there's a sort of self-policing... Mm. You'd give advice to each other,
sure.
I think. You'd say, well, maybe try this, or is the irony coming across in this?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you understand what irony is, Dapper Laughs? Because I don't think you do.
Yeah.
That isn't just saying a thing and pulling a funny face. It has to mean something. So, you know, there would be a bit of self-policing about it, I think, in a way. And then actually this... Mm. Because comedians have kind of got together and gone, this is not what we want to be associated with, which is sort of weird in itself. But it is, you've got to make your own decisions. And nearly every joke I've done, probably at some point, someone will come up to you and go, it's so much about the persona, I think, of the person as well. Oh. So, like, some people can get away with a lot more because you like them and you trust them and you know what they.
Well, someone like Al Murray goes quite close to the line in terms of, you know, the worst place to follow Al, or never follow Al, is when he's just played to a load of barmen. Because he'll just rip the roof off. And some of those people, not all of them, will be thinking, he's one of us.
Yeah.
And they won't have got the irony on the whole thing.
Yeah.
And that's the danger. But you can't legislate for that, really. There is, you know, someone will always be offended. There will be a chicken who died crossing the road somewhere, and his relatives will be offended on his behalf.
Yeah, but then you can't just say. You also can't just say it's just a joke either, because some things, if you can say, you know, I just murdered someone, but it was just a joke.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Yeah. You know, and there's a bit of the thing that I can't remember which of the many World War II Nazi films it is, but there's a film where there's a really horrible bit where some Nazi guards force Jewish people to dance in the street. Does anyone know what that? And they're really laughing at them forcing
Murphy's Mob.
Murphy's Mob. But they're basically a machine gun, and they're laughing. So you could say, from their perspective, they're saying this is just a joke, but what they're doing is obviously more than a joke. Sure. So there is a line.
Yeah.
And you do have to think about it. But I think most comedians really do think about it.
Mm.
So that's when you get sort of surprised sometimes when, after that long, someone will come and go.
Yeah, yeah.
But also things change, you know, things do change. And then you look at that and go, oh, well, maybe I do have to reassess in the light of the 2 decades I've been doing that stolen joke. Maybe it's time to move on.
Yes. Mm.
It's a terrible shame if one of my one-liners goes down, because then there's only 4 left. And then I have to try and write another one. And it takes me, genuinely, if I come up with 3 jokes in a year that I can use in a stand-up show near the front, I'm so pleased with that. So I just can't really envisage how you go about it.
Horses for courses. I mean, I can't write a story to save my life. I think, what it was to begin with was I was so scared when I was on stage. I had to get to the joke as quickly as possible. So I ended up writing lots of really quick jokes so that the audience wouldn't have time to be bored or heckle. So, but that is, you know, people go, oh, that's your style now. And they've got to keep it up. I remember once supporting Rory Bremner on tour, and he did 10 minutes without impressions. And you feel the audience going, what? This isn't what I paid for. And once you've set up a style, it's actually quite difficult to suddenly change route. You know, it's probably good stand-up that he was doing. It just wasn't... People don't want you to do the old jokes, but they don't want you to do another style.
No.
They want, you know, they pay for some more of that. And it's quite... You know, once you've set out your brand, for want of a better word, then you've sort of got to keep within it. But the danger is, of course, that you end up writing old jokes with new words. And you want to try and make it different or interesting for yourself. And if you can do that, then it will be for the crowd.
Mm. Still hard, don't it? Why have I written in my book, Kids Writing Set?
kids writing set.
Yeah, why have I written that down in my book?
It's what you want for Christmas.
It is. Kids writing set. Do you have any idea why I would have written that?
Kids writing set?
To you, in relation to you? Does anyone know why? Well, that will remain a mystery. That will be the name of this week's episode. Kids writing set. Could you write a joke? You could write a joke about anything. This is probably what I was thinking. Write a joke about kids writing set.
Sorry I'm late, but I got stuck behind a protractor.
Good. It's good. Well, I think that is a good point. Unfortunately, the time has flown by. I had lots of... It was very, very, very interesting to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming down to the Leicester Square Theatre here in London. We had to fight through Jennifer Lawrence's crowd.
Oh, that's who it is. I wondered who it was.
The premiere of that. Well, because a lot of them were trying to get here, but then they were just blocked.
Yeah, I thought Rich is doing well.
Ladies and gentlemen, Moo and Joe! Thank you. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring. I was the one asking the questions. Good, weren't they? My guest was Milton Jones. The music is by Pest. Thank you to Orange Mark and everyone at the British Comedy Guide. It's mainly just Mark and his mate Aaron, to be honest. And there might be some other people there as well. Thanks to Chris Evans, not that one, and all of his nutters from Go Faster Stripe. Thank you very much to Ben Walker, who is not here. He's off having a child somewhere out of his bum. Thank you to my producer, Dave Gribb. This week it is a Go Faster Stripe, Fuzz and Sky Potato production. I feel like I forgot someone. If I did, sorry. See you next time. Bye. Thank you for consuming my podcast, either by sight or through your ears, or both for some of you. If you've enjoyed it, go to GoFasterStripe.com and buy a DVD, or come and see me on tour. Go to RichTang.com/gigs. You can find out if I'm coming near to you. We'll be back next week with more crazy adventures. What will we get up to next? I wonder which they'll choose. Will it be the man who's a tiny penis? Oh, no, I can't even remember what it works. Anyway, see you next time.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to RichHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.